Roguecast is the official podcast of Rogues Gallery Comics and Games. Every week we talk about new comic releases, store news, and whatever games, movies, and TV is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
This is Dave.
I'm Nick.
And now, on with the show. Welcome to Roguecast, episode 252, and I didn't look up what X-Men 252 was.
That's all right. People are probably bored of it anyway.
Yeah.
We were clearly amusing ourselves,
yes,
though.
Yeah.
But we can move on past the gimmick.
Yes. So this week, we are going to have... There's no special topics, no movies that we caught. None of us saw Hellboy.
Nope. It is interesting to me that Hellboy is getting raked over the coals.
Yeah, well, it's interesting is that I've already seen the backlash from my friends of the, it's not that bad.
Right.
So it may have done that a huge favor.
Right. I don't know if it's a huge favor. What I think is going to happen is that I bet many of the people who liked the previous one, yep, are going to like this one as different, but clearly at least somewhat similar in the sense that it's not that close to the comic.
Yeah, not that good.
I've heard it's like ultra-violent and like super like swear.
That makes sense because I watched a Red Band trailer at some point and I watched Hellboy drop the F-bomb and I'm like, that's actually not really a thing in the comics
as far
as I know.
No.
I'm completely disinterested.
Yeah,
I was already disinterested, but now I'm as disinterested as is possible to be.
I'm going to watch it on Redbox.
Yeah. Are you?
Yeah. I'm going to watch it. I mean, I watched
some
bad movies.
Terrible.
It's fine.
I don't see myself ever watching
this morning, because I couldn't sleep last night, I watched Blade Trinity.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yep.
But yes, people have been seeing it, and somebody and have been like, no, that was fun. If you were watching the trailers and you thought that looks kind of fun, maybe you should go see it.
Yeah, but we are not going to spoil
suffer
review
for our sins.
There will be no spoiler review of it this week.
Right.
In about 2 weeks, we'll have our spoiler review of Avengers Endgame.
Right.
I'm making my way through the MCU. I'm watching a movie a day and posting it on my Facebook.
I think instead of calling it the MCU, we should call it the McU.
The McU?
Yeah.
Sounds like a horrible McDonald's burger.
It does.
No, it's Galactus eats it. It's the McDonald's universe. Anyway, so yes, you're moving forward pretty fast. You did what, Avenger or Cap 3?
I just rewatched Civil War.
Civil War, yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's...
How much more do you have to go?
9 movies, I think?
Mm-hmm.
No, maybe not that many. Yeah, 9 movies. I've seen 13, I think. 13 or 14. So, yeah.
It destroy all your love for the Marvel Universe?
It did not.
Oh.
Love the MCU.
His watching of Thor Dark World maybe.
I did realize that Thor Dark World is a weaker movie, but I still like it. Like, the weakest Marvel movie is probably Thor Dark World, and I still like it.
Yeah, when we had it on recently, I was seeing bits and pieces that I liked in that, and generally have somewhat fond memories of it.
Yeah, there's good stuff in it.
I still think Iron Man 3 is their weakest, but...
I think for me it probably would be, but...
Having watched them all in rapid succession... Thor Dark World is objectively worse than Iron Man 3.
I don't know about that word objectively, but I'm sure you believe it.
But I think I like Thor a little more than you do.
That's fair.
Yeah,
that's fair.
And I'm in the same place.
That's fair. I like Iron Man more than you guys do, so that's probably why.
I understand you like traitorous 1%ers.
I do. I love traitorous 1%ers.
And we like hard-drinking...
Hard-drinking Vikings.
Vikings, yes.
Yeah. People often say that. They're like, Dave looks like a hard-drinking Viking guy.
Well, Dave, you just came back from your drink-fueled vacation through New Orleans.
That is actually true. I can't say I Vikinged it up, but...
Did you say verily at
but
any
I did
point
ride on a boat.
Did you Cajun it up? I.e.
A little bit.
All right, store news. In about, I guess, a week and a half, we will have the Magic the Gathering War of the Spark pre-release on Saturday, April 27th, Sunday, April 28th. Still spots in all those pre-releases.
Yep.
Free Comic Book Day is Saturday, May 4th. We got all the comics. You're sitting here in a giant stack for us to go through. And
just waiting to be read and previewed.
Yep. So we'll totally do that in the next few weeks. International Tabletop Day has moved to June, so that's on Saturday, June 1st. We'll have a bunch of board games, details coming on that soon. There's a Modern Horizons pre-release, Sunday, June 9th. That's the first going straight to modern format set that they've done,
I think.
Free RPG Day is Saturday, June 15th. On that weekend, Greater Austin Comic Con, Saturday, June 15th and Sunday, June 16th. We are selling tickets for that right now. They're $30 for the month of April. I believe they go up to $50 in May, so if you want them, get them early. You can buy them through us, and you also get like free kids tickets to go with them. So like,
yeah, I really think that's a pretty cool offer.
I do
so
too.
It seems like it's a great time for parents and kids to experience together.
All right, news. Most of our news this week revolves around Disney+.
Yep.
The Star Wars Celebration was this weekend.
And yep. Where does that take place?
I don't know. It's a place where they celebrate Star Wars. The Galaxy Coruscant. I don't know.
Okay. I think it's Orlando.
Thank you, Nick.
Oh, there's something where it's a bunch of Star Wars people.
But Coruscant, I thought it was like well known. Like I assume that people who weren't me would know.
I don't know.
Universal Studios.
But they do a lot of Star Wars announcements, and they also did some big Disney streaming announcements.
So the big announcement is that Disney Plus now has a date, November 12th, and a price, which is $6.99 a month, or you can pay $70 and get a whole year.
And that's like cheaper than Netflix, right?
Yeah, considerably. That's half the price of Netflix.
Yeah. Yep. They are doing the cheap buy-in to ensure that everyone gets it.
And the interesting, all the content's ad-free, which puts it up over Hulu.
Huh.
They said they likely will bundle it with Hulu and ESPN Plus for a discount price.
Interesting.
You'll be able to download it directly to your devices.
They said something about a discount if you already have Hulu, right?
All they've said is they likely will bundle all of its streaming services for one price at a discount. Hmm. So like the cable style of things.
Interesting.
So there are available at launch. All the Simpsons is moving to Disney Plus.
Thirty-something seasons.
The Mandalorian, Captain Marvel will be there when it first launches. Forky Asks Questions, a series of Pixar shorts, all Pixar's theatrical shorts. A live-action Lady and the Tramp starring Tessa Thompson and Justin Theroux. The World According to Jeff Goldblum via Nat Geo. More than 250 hours of content from Nat Geo. 5,000 episodes of Disney Channel content. And 100 Disney Channel original movies.
It's all the Disney Channel content that I'm there. I need 5,000 episodes of Zach and something do something.
I can't wait to watch High School Musical 7.
I feel like High School Musical 7 was Anna and the Apocalypse.
Yep.
And that's all I need to watch.
Yeah. So other series that have been announced... The Falcon and Winter Soldier with Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan. WandaVision with Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany. And by the way, people are hating on that name. I love that name.
What is it?
WandaVision.
Oh, I see. Like it's their portmanteau of their name. Yeah, their Brangelina.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm neither here nor there on
that. It certainly has the quality of not having been done, and it's kind of funny.
But if it leads me to believe that they're going to do like a romance series for it,
yeah,
I'm for it. I want this to happen.
Loki starring Tom Hiddleston, Marvel's What If animated series, the first installment asks, what if Peggy Carter had taken the super soldier serum instead of Steve Rogers?
And I've heard that Hayley Atwell is coming back to voice, yeah. And they've also said that most of the
also going to draw the whole thing.
Most of the characters are coming, or most of the actors are coming back to play their characters.
That's pretty awesome. I mean, voiceover's not that hard.
No, but I mean, it's like you get like Tommy Lee Jones to come back as the
amazing.
That's fantastic.
A Star Wars series about Cassian Andor and K2SO starring Diego Luna and Alan Tudyk.
I didn't know that Diego Luna was producing that as well.
Oh, interesting.
The robot's going to be
robot voiced by Alan Tudyk will be in that series.
Makes sense.
A Marvel series about Hawkeye and Kate Bishop starring Jeremy Renner.
This is the animated stuff?
Nope.
No, this live is live action.
So this that's right. I did hear about that. So Jeremy Renner's going to be in it, and Kate Bishop, she's going to be in the movie, right? We've seen her.
Seen a image that I thought was his daughter that maybe is Kate Bishop.
Interesting.
Or maybe his daughter is Kate Bishop. We don't know.
Right.
And he changed they changed last names to keep her safe or something.
Can we presume that he's going to have a pretty notable role in this movie? He's in the trailers, obviously. Yeah. He's going to get a big role.
He's got a haircut.
Yep.
Did you see that poster, the fan-made poster that everyone had?
That. Yes,
oh, that's right, you did.
Yes. Cap looks like Vanilla Ice.
Yes.
It's amazing.
I am still going to hope that that I get my wish, which is he giant mans up.
I hope so, too.
And kick some.
I also want to see this.
But whatever it is, presumably it'll be... Hopefully, they want it to be so cool that you will be like, I will watch a series with that dude. Because that's happening.
By the way, I'm not done.
Yep, go ahead.
They're doing a follow-up to the 2018 film Love, Simon. High School Musical, the series. Into the Unknown, Making Frozen 2, a documentary series. There are two documentaries coming about making Marvel.
Yeah.
They're making a new Phineas and Ferb movie, which I am weirdly excited about because Phineas and Ferb is awesome. And they're making Candace Against the Universe, which is also a Phineas and Ferb movie. They're doing Lamp Life, a Pixar short starring Toy Story's Bo Peep, and Noelle, a holiday movie starring Anna Kendrick, Bill Hader, Billy Eichner, and Shirley MacLaine. That is all that we know. But that's their like first year. That's crazy amount of stuff.
Plus, they're going to have a lot of the Marvel movies on streaming, not all of them, but some of them.
I missed the rolling out in year one part. All Star Wars films, all Pixar films. Togo, an original film starring Willem Dafoe telling the real-life story of a man and his lead sled dog journey through Alaska. Timmy Failure, based on Stephen Pass's illustrated book. Stargirl, based on Jerry Spinelli's best-selling book and starring Grace VanderWaal and Giancarlo Esposito. And Awkward, because DC will also have a Stargirl. And more than 7,500 episodes and 500 films from the Disney Library.
Let me just backtrack a second. Yep. Willem Dafoe in a story about...
a man and his lead sled dog's journey through the Alaskan tundra.
That sounds like...
so I guess it's not a young man if he's being played by Willem Dafoe.
Maybe they're going to de-age him Marvel style.
Maybe so. Maybe he did de-age.
Like that Christian Bale Onion article?
Yeah, wait. Maybe he's a vampire and he just kind of like puts on old age makeup to simulate it.
Yeah.
Then he plays his grandson or something.
They've been re-aging him in every movie.
Yes. Yeah. The perpetually youthful, actually the perpetually middle-aged Willem Dafoe.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a pretty notable lineup.
I will definitely be getting Disney Plus. Like, this sounds like an amazing lineup.
I'm probably just going to pay the $70. I don't care.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's what I did with DC. I got the $50 deal, and I'm pretty happy with it, even though I haven't watched Doom Patrol.
I'm probably not going to get it because I don't watch television.
That's true.
I am the things on there that I'm most curious about are the Star Wars original production shows.
So they leaked a teaser trailer for The Mandalorian, and we all watched it because we're piratey like that.
Yeah, you know, any time Comic-Con leaks something, I'm almost always tempted to watch it. And this is essentially the same kind of deal.
I thought that was a great trailer. I'm like super excited.
For the record, it was not like a full trailer. It was a trailer / behind the scenes.
Yes.
Yeah, it was basically Jon Favreau giving a rundown of what the Mandalorian is. And yeah.
Was there any like dialogue?
I don't think so.
It was kind of atmosphere, and there was some indications of things, of storylines, but it was mostly background and tone.
Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau sort of talking, but that was the only thing.
I've forgotten that Dave Filoni was
involved. What did he say about it? Did he say that as far as like the freedom that they've got to play around in that universe, what did he say?
They're post Return of the Jedi.
Yes.
So that's an era that they really haven't explored very much. And yeah, he feels he's like... it starts off with the Mandalorian sort of like cleaning up, you know, picking up criminals in this post-Fallen Empire, and then leads into something else. And yeah, he says that there's a lot of freedom to explore a thing that's not been explored very much.
And we see Mandalorian, we see Gina Carano's character.
Oh, yeah, she looks great.
And then there's one more character, and I forget who it is.
Yeah, there's something notable, too, and I'm blanking on it.
I think it's like one of the Bounty Hunter Guilds. I think one of the heads of those I think has been...
oh, well,
like,
Carl Weathers.
Carl Weathers is playing that character who I think has been alluded to in, like, Expanded Universe stuff. I don't know. I was already kind of excited just because I like the Mandalorians because they look cool.
And it's Pedro Pascal playing him, right?
Pedro Pascal.
And he's
so
great.
Is he going to be... so he's a lead of the series. He's not just, like, Ray Park doing visuals or something,
No, he is the Mandalorian.
Okay.
So they're not doing a stealth Boba Fett, or at least they don't think so.
No, it doesn't seem like it is. It seems like it's a kind of like Boba Fett, a sort of bounty hunter who found the armor.
Yeah. So I'm excited for this. I weirdly, after seeing all the Star Wars news, I am kind of jumping back on the Star Wars bandwagon a little bit.
Me too. I kind of want to go read the Age of Rebellion stuff that came out last week and catch up on it.
Yeah, I just like the feel that these... this trailer, and I guess the one we'll be talking about in just a second, had.
Yeah,
they,
me too.
They have a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And I think I got kind of into what Jon Favreau was talking. The way he was kind of talking and sort of about his experiences with Star Wars.
Right, we should also mention the Taika Waititi
involved
in that mix.
Somehow, yeah.
Because when they mentioned his name, the crowd cheered, and you do see a little bit of him in the trailer
talking
about it, too.
Just an insane amount of directors involved in this, and I think this kind of brain trust could be very good for Star Wars, because it'll bring sort of different elements and what they work well with.
Do you think it'll be as good as the Hangover 3 Joker movie?
I think this might beat that by some degree.
I mean, Favreau was instrumental in creating the MCU. So for him to be a ground floor of the Star Wars TV universe is fascinating to me.
I wanted him to make more Jungle Book stuff.
Yeah, he's
I actually would have done like that. I was joking.
Lion King, what do you want?
Yeah, more Jungle Book stuff.
Lion King.
I want more Baloo. I want more Bagheera.
Bill Murray Baloo.
I want more
cool.
giant Gigantopithecus orangutan.
I would rather he do The Mandalorian than Jungle Book 2.
And I understand you have a love of the franchise.
I'm remembering correctly.
Although I thought you had given it up years ago, Randy. I don't know why I thought that.
It's hilarious.
Am I misremembering? Is Bryce Dallas Howard also one of the directors involved in
this? It's possible. I don't know.
Or she's going to try her hand at directing at this?
I don't know. So many people are involved in this. I don't remember who all it is.
I think that sounds interesting. I'm very excited that Dave Filoni is involved.
Yeah, me too. I've been dragged back into Star Wars. I was sworn off it like 3 or 4 or 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
and then I got dragged back into it by Force Awakens and by Clone Wars and Rebels. And
then you were like, "Oh, Last Jedi."
Yeah. And I never swore off Star Wars after Last Jedi, no. Even though I didn't like Last Jedi and loved Rogue One. I still feel like I'm disappointed about the news they're coming out where they're saying that basically the Rise of Skywalker is going to be the last hurrah for the films for a little while. They're going to rest it because I liked Solo quite a bit. I was looking forward to seeing some more. I wanted to see the Obi-Wan movie. I wanted to see a Boba Fett movie. Like, I wanted the expanded of the Star Wars movies, and I'm kind of bummed that it didn't take off for them.
They are still proceeding forward with the Knights of the Old Republic Benioff series, right?
Yeah, that's still going. And Ryan Johnson.
They just mean that they're not doing the ones that'll kind of depict the post Jedi universe, right?
Well, they're just going to take a few years. Like, there's not going to be a Star Wars movie for
even the Benioff one is a little ways out.
It's a ways out. They're in development. Yeah.
Okay.
So, and that's
I don't think that's a bad thing.
Well, that could be smart for them because they've seen probably what we've seen in comics sometimes, which is if you retire a character for a few years, fans start to get miss them. The stuff they didn't like about them fades away, and then when they return, as long as you put a good creative team on it, they can come back big time.
Yeah. The issue I have right now is it seems like everything is ending.
Yeah.
Game of Thrones is coming to an end. The Marvel Cinematic Universe is if not ending, changing.
So you feel that you are right on the cusp of having zero to watch?
No.
I
feel like all my big geek tent poles are ending, and that makes me a little shaky. I like having that foundational like thing that I can go to.
You better get into the Eternals fast, then.
I will. I'll read all the Eternals this weekend.
And Shang-Chi.
But the other thing we want to talk about, the Star Wars Rise of Skywalker trailer, which came out.
Yep. Which I guess, until you got to the end of the trailer... it's obviously out there now, but until you get to the end of the trailer, they didn't even say what the name was.
No.
All my friends were spoiling it on Facebook because they can't keep their mouth closed for even 2 seconds.
Yep.
I feel that way about Game of Thrones. I saw so many, like, non-spoiler spoilers.
Oh, yeah. Everybody thinks they're, like, some deliciously clever Bond villain, and I'm like, no, you're a dumb Bond
thug. Let me put out this series of... images that may or may not make sense. I'm like, shut the hell up and let me enjoy my Game of Thrones.
After I got spoiled on a pretty notable thing by someone because I waited like an hour, I watch Game of Thrones pretty much live now because if I don't, I'm going to get spoiled.
Yeah. I still need to finish catching the previous season, and I have not been spoiled on anything that happened in that first episode. I'm going to try and catch up on the previous season this week, and then I'm going to try and watch the rest of the episodes as they come.
Yeah.
But I luckily have not. Every time I saw one of those non-spoiler things, I just ignored it.
Yeah, we talked about this on my TV podcast that Game of Thrones is sort of the last water cooler show.
Like, yeah,
what Discovery is sort of that, but it's a much smaller footprint.
Right. Well, it simply doesn't have the base that some of those ones do. So in this store, it does.
Yeah.
Literally, not literally. Everybody's watching. I don't believe Julian Kadar. But
we all
they'll get around to it.
But Tuesday mornings have sort of become our Discovery discussion days.
Yes, today was slow. We didn't get to talk too much
the
about
Discovery
it.
Discussion.
But going back to the Star Wars, the Rise of Skywalker, the trailer.
Did we all kind of like it?
I liked it.
It's a quick teaser. Not a ton happens.
Mm-hmm.
But
Rey does a cool badass flip over a TIE fighter.
Yeah, that was really cool because she was also doing that. Well, it's just a cool moody scene where she's like running and this thing's coming across the desert at her, and then it's like, is it Kylo Ren's ship? It is a long-form TIE fighter, but
it looks like a TIE interceptor.
Right, it could just be the current version of a TIE interceptor. But yeah, she does a backflip over and it looks hella
cool.
She's
brandishing it looks like Luke's lightsaber, which was cut in half at the end of Last Jedi.
What else do we I did not do any of the frame by frame
or
any of the sites that did.
Well, I just
but there was
that.
A notable character of old who shows up. Lando is in there.
Was so good.
What I loved is that he seemed to be in the laughing scoundrel mode.
Yeah.
He's like,
did you see the really macabre meme of the
Han? To get the shit back over my dead body.
A clip from Solo.
I also like that we see like a little desert skiff with Finn and Poe and C-3PO on it.
Somebody I saw in a comment thread, I think it might have been Yehudi, said like, like the thing he was most excited was to see C-3PO in the action game. And it's true, he's like on that skiff or something like that, and I'm like, hey, it's C-3PO.
Yeah,
yeah, exactly. It was kind
of
cool.
And then, of course, we get the laughter of Ian McDiarmid, who is back as the Emperor.
Also, a final shot of what looks like the Death Star.
The fallen Death Star, yeah.
Oh, is that what that is?
It looks like it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I kind of didn't quite come to me what that was supposed to be.
They're going to go in there, and he's like, I'm still alive! I've been under this Death Star for 100 years!
There's something on my foot.
Could someone please lift it? It's very heavy.
I'm just saying, if we're on Endor, I want to see some Ewoks. and I might be the only one on this table that want to see the...
I want to see... First of all, they've done Porgs. People are braced for it. They need to get over themselves if they can't deal with an Ewok. But yes, I want to see, like, current tech Ewoks. It'd be kind of cool to see, have they changed? Have they not changed? What do current special effects
Star
do
Wars
with them?
Star Wars The Rise of Wicket. That better happen.
Wicket, Low Gray, Chief Chirpa. I'm down with all of them.
What is wrong with you people?
They were cool.
Look, it's part of the mythology. Accept it.
Hashtag Ewok should die.
Wrong. Sounds like a hater. So, one thing some of my friends have been a little freaking out about is that especially for viewers who are very into Last Jedi, it sort of felt like it was kind of pushing forward into new territory and away from the Skywalker lineage. Yeah. So Rise of Skywalker either sounds like backpedaling or a tip of the hat to the I don't know, the incel xenophobic fans that didn't like it on that basis. But like I get there's also people just want it like the Skywalker lineage, you know, as a mythic sort of thing.
Yeah.
I'm not going to assume that they're all Nazis.
I don't think Disney is going to basically give the middle finger to the guy that is about to start his own Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah, I agree.
I feel like that would just
I
be
think
really
the title, which could have all sorts of meanings, is meant to draw in the people who were dissatisfied with Last Jedi. But I think they've talked about it. It's like the Last Jedi could be Princess Leia. It could be, I don't know, the Rise of Skywalker could have something to do with Leia, could have something to do with Kylo Ren. There's like
it could
a
have something
bunch
to do
of different.
With actually, Luke.
Right, it could have something to do with Luke.
It could have Rey could just take the Skywalker name, just don't have a last name.
Right. Or maybe the Jedi Order will be disbanded and Skywalker's Rangers or some weird thing like that will happen,
or
like that we just couldn't even predict.
But people are freaking out that they're going to be like, oh, well, they're just going to backpedal and make Rey Luke's daughter. Yeah.
I don't think, I think that would just be, because they like they kind of do what Marvel Comics has generally been good at over the decades, which is you build on what came before. Even if you don't love every detail of it, you build on it.
Yeah.
And I think they're gonna do that.
I feel like Last Jedi was so divisive that no matter what they did, it was gonna be divisive.
Right.
If they had doubled down on what Last Jedi was, they're gonna have dissatisfied fans. If they go back, the people who love Last Jedi are like, oh, you guys are backing off this brave new world. And
right.
I feel like this was a teaser, and it's a weird thing to be making a lot of assumptions based on it.
What do y'all feel about
internet culture?
How do y'all feel about the Emperor?
I'm okay with it. I don't love it. But I'm fine with it.
I suppose because Abrams did the one that was the most strangely homage-y to them, like almost to a fault, definitely to a fault.
Yeah.
It seemed a little weird to go back to that well.
Yeah. He's going to make a shot-for-shot remake of Return of the Jedi.
You'll get your Ewoks, Nick.
I know.
Only this time Porgs are going to throw him down into the into the pit.
There's a bunch of them lifting him up.
They're going to be wearing a trench coat. They're wearing a Vader suit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they rescued the Vader suit from the fire before him.
Yeah.
And so we also do we see that Kylo Ren like reforges his
helmet,
helmet,
which I know also that was a sticking point for some people. They're like, he broke his helmet, he shouldn't reforge it.
Right. Practically speaking, has his character truly changed much from between those two movies though? He may not be trying to fulfill his destiny in quite the same way, like I will become Vader too.
Yeah.
But he still kind of seemed like he was trying
to
become Vader too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
He's basically down the dark.
We'll see. I still maintain he plays out very much like an anime villain does. That's one of those kind of, you know, there's a little bit of streak of nobility in them. You might want them to be a good guy, but like they're pretty bad.
I hope they don't do that. I hope they just make him a villain. I don't need to see that streak.
I hope that they find their own path with it. I don't think he necessarily needs to be like a full villain.
I don't need a redemptive arc for
him. But I wouldn't mind if he kind of did almost I don't know, some variant of the kind of thing that happened at the end of the Serenity movie, which is walk away from it, or something like that.
I don't know. I think I don't want to see the incel poster boy get a redemption arc. I would like to see him suffer.
We'll see. I in a way, I don't think of him so much as, like, as analogous to that, because there's a sort of... The movies always kind of romanticize everything. I mean, hell, Vader is essentially the enforcer for the Nazis.
Yeah, sure.
And yet we love Vader.
Yeah.
And we don't love Nazis, but we love Vader.
Yeah.
So I don't think that you have... I don't feel the need to think of Kylo Ren as, like, incel poster boy. If he ever gets anything, then it's a victory for the incels, because I don't think they have actually claimed him. Yeah. But anyway...
Well, I hope that he is revealed to be several porgs in a trench coat.
I just hope the Emperor kills him.
We shall see.
I'm actually a big fan of the Emperor coming back, because I think he is a good villain. And
The one thing that they right now I think don't have is a strong villain. Hux is no Tarkin, and in some way Snoke is no Emperor, and Ren is in some ways is no Vader. I didn't want them to necessarily be that, but they don't have like a heavy that's kind of like carries the weight of those original trilogy guys.
Yeah.
So bringing the Emperor back, even though it is a little bit of a... I mean, Star Wars is always tributing itself, but...
Well, I heard a weird fan theory, and I...
It's Darth Plagueis.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
I made that up.
That the Emperor was always Darth Plagueis.
Huh.
Who had sort of just kept himself alive.
I mean, that sort of makes sense, because he tells Anakin the story of Darth Plagueis. I mean...
You know what I was thinking?
It would make sense. And then... That
maybe
could tie
a callback to the episode that three? Episode two?
And it could tie into...
Three is, I think, what he told him about Plagueis.
Yeah.
And it could tie into Snoke, and who's looking sort of necromantic and that kind of stuff.
You know
I
what?
I would like to see Snoke explain a little
I kind of like that idea now that I think about it, because it also... Yeah, the Plagueis thing seemed to kind of go nowhere.
Yeah.
But I was thinking the other day... You know, a lot of people... You know, when Kylo Ren told Rey that her parents were nobodies...
Yeah.
To me, it felt like the movie intended for us to take that as truth, just as we were intended to take it as truth when Vader said, I'm your father, search your feelings. He didn't, like, pull out a documentation.
No.
We just took it as truth because the moment made it seem true.
Yeah.
But people are like, oh, Kylo Ren's a Sith guy. Why would you trust him? Why would we trust Vader? But clearly, we would later go on to see, like, okay, Obi-Wan basically confirms it in the next thing. But I was just thinking, Sith generally seem like when they think it will serve their purpose, they tell the truth.
Jedi lie all the time.
Yeah, it's true. So Vader told Luke that he was his father because he thought he could win him over. Kylo Ren told Rey the truth about her parents because he thought it would win her over then. Was the Emperor, when he talked about Darth Plagueis, telling the truth?
Yeah.
That's something that's never fully been explored. And I think if he did have that kind of power over life and death and they went with that story, I think that would be pretty cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's one of the big things about bringing the Emperor in is that they're basically trying to...
Or he's some fusion of himself and Plagueis or something.
They're trying to make the prequels matter again.
Right.
And, respect. I credit him for trying to do that.
He was supposed to have killed Plagueis, right? Did he apprentice under him, or was he apprentice to?
I don't remember.
I thought Plagueis was like before that.
Yeah, I thought he was ancient.
I thought he was like supposed to be ancient.
Maybe so.
But I believe that he was basically telling Anakin a story of himself.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Which would be very cool.
It's interesting. I am neither here nor there on the Emperor coming back, but I'm fine with it. As you guys noted, he's a good villain.
What if the reveal about how he could preserve his life is like you can do that if you bond your soul to another person's soul or something like that, and essentially you're two in one. And so the Emperor is around because he killed Plagueis or he found him or whatever, and is like a fusion of the two of them.
Mm-hmm.
That would sort of allow maybe give a reasonable reason why he might physically resurrect.
I think there's a number of.
Yeah.
Possible.
And it may be something we haven't thought of, but now that you've mentioned that, I do hope it is the case.
Yeah. The other trailer is the Star Wars Fallen Jedi trailer, which is a story trailer for a video game that EA is doing.
Oh, I forgot to watch this.
Oh, did you not watch it?
No. I didn't watch it, but I couldn't quite tell what kind of game it was, because it was just like, were we watching basically the story trailer, the cutscene?
Yes, but here's the thing that's notable. EA has said, no microtransactions, no DLC, which they have become notorious for doing.
Right. They got...
So I didn't watch it. So is this a third person?
Yeah, think of it as like, what was the Force Unleashed?
Okay.
Yes.
Something like that. It's a lost story. It is in the wake of Order 66. It is a Padawan who is like the last Jedi, which they've gone to that well a few times. But he's basically just trying to survive on the run from, you know, the stormtroopers and the birth of the Empire, and seems like maybe he and some other Jedi are involved. It's got a lot of action-y type stuff. It looks like a third-person kind of thing.
Like Force Unleashed, I felt like they were trying to at least hint at going a bit deeper with the characters, yeah. which, you know, obviously all the animation designs look great.
Yeah.
I did not know what type of game it was, because I think it is just a story trailer, right?
Yeah, but I believe that's the game. I mean, I think we were seeing some sequences from the game.
Were you? Okay, I was not sure.
I'm pretty sure.
But anyway,
that sounds really cool.
I'll have to kind of wait till I hear about the game. I ended up really liking Force Unleashed and Force Unleashed 2 to a somewhat lesser degree.
Yeah.
But overall, those were some of my favorite recent Star Wars games. So if it's anything like those, then I guess I will have to give it a look.
Yeah, I'm inclined to give it a look. It's a good trailer. All right, comic news. Ecstatics is returning. Mike Allred, there's a one-shot coming out.
Ecstatics, the very quirky mutant series that was drawn by Mike Allred, written by Peter Milligan.
Yep.
And introduced Dupe to the Marvel Universe, the little green potato alien mutant.
He was the only character that survived that, I believe.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess so. They were a bunch of oddball. They were some really weird mutants.
Yeah, they were.
Except for that one that showed up in the Deadpool 2 movie.
The Orphan?
It wasn't Orphan, was it? It was one of them.
Yeah. Anyway, it's neither here nor there for me. I liked Ecstatics, but I don't need to see it back. I saw a lot of my friends super excited about this.
It was, at the time, you know, a sort of like, it was like the X-Men book for the hipster crowd.
Yeah, yeah.
And I kind of enjoyed it as its own weird opus. I don't like... It didn't quite feel like it fit in with the rest, because it also had Allred doing kind of like somewhat modern, but also his retro style of artwork.
Yeah.
It felt like a weird quirk project that was cool. But yeah, like you, I'm not like... it sort of felt of its time, too. It was during that crazy Bill Gemmett's time.
Yeah, it was.
Nobody
it was
knew what was left from right then.
So DC is doing two new series in July, the 12-issue series. One is Lois Lane, from Greg Rucka and Mike Perkins, and the other is Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen from Matt Fraction and Steve Lieber.
I'm interested in both of these books.
So am I.
To a surprisingly high degree.
Creative team alone.
Yep. But I've actually just been reading some of Rucka's stuff from back in the day, from including No Man's Land and 52.
Yeah.
And I know all the kind of slight headaches that come with him, a little bit dry, angsty characters and stuff like that. But I also really like his writing most of the time.
I liked it on his Wonder Woman stuff. I think blending kind of West Wing with... I liked it, personally.
Yeah, I had some mixed feelings on it, but I liked it for sure at times. Yeah, him doing a sort of... Do we have in front of us, Randy, the hook for it? You know, does he...
Yeah. Here's the basics. Lois Lane, Rucka says, is the best investigative reporter in the DC Universe. That's what the book is about. She's going to be in dangerous situations. That she will be visiting various corners of the superhero world, but with a realism that's inherent to her world.
Cool. Rucka's going to get to play around with that. I'm sure. Send her to Kandak. Send her as the journalist visiting Thangar or whatever.
And Jimmy Olsen's book is described as more light and optimistic, ridiculous and sublime. Basically, it's that Jimmy has pivoted to video. He's basically the only thing keeping the lights on of the planets anymore. So he's basically...
The idea being journalism is dead, so he...
This kind of sounds like Fraction doing kind of his Hawkeye riff.
Yeah, he's taking a show on the road to explore various settings in the DCU.
I think that's a pretty good fit for Jimmy Olsen.
Mm-hmm.
I think I mentioned this before. I once got somehow into the way I characterized Fraction on a message board as being kind of removed and ironically detached or whatever about how he did superheroes. And it's his wife, Kelly Thompson.
Yes. Yeah.
She came...
Kelly Sue DeConnick.
Kelly Sue DeConnick. Sorry, I'm mixing up my Kellys. She jumped in to, like, say, I can assure you he's very sincere about it. And I'm like, I didn't know a polite way to say he may be sincere, but he cannot help but write it as with a bit of irony.
Yeah.
And same for his, like, what I read of his Hawkeye run, which I still do want to read all of. But I think it's a good fit for Jimmy Olsen is where I'm ultimately leading. Is Jimmy Olsen is a kind of the weirdness of his life is I think something that will be well suited for.
Who did you say the art was going to be?
Mike Perkins on Lois Lane, which looks gorgeous.
Yep.
And Steve Lieber.
Lieber probably going to be doing a little bit of his comedic chops that he learned on Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
This comes from an LA Times story, which I'd highly recommend people seek out. It's got a bunch of art and stuff in there.
Yeah.
But
I never thought that I would, among the DC books I'm most looking forward to would be a Lois and Jimmy book, but I'm super into both of them.
Lieber said, most of my career, my art has been the place where human went to die. I just really didn't get to be funny at all, and that's changed a lot over the past couple of years. So, I'm super excited about both these books.
Yeah.
Which is weird, because I'm never super excited about anything DC's doing.
Yes, the right creators.
Yep. There was, on the same day the Star Wars trailer came out, the Veronica Mars trailer dropped on Hulu.
Yep.
It's going to hit on July 26th. It's just her in her office talking about what she has to face leaving the office every day. I could not be more excited to have Veronica Mars back.
New show, new movie,
New show, 10 episodes following up on the movie.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's a crazy world that we live in where this cult show, kind of a cult show?
Very much a cult show.
Managed to get a movie some years after it finished, and now that movie is actually getting its own show again.
Yeah.
I'm hoping this means Hulu is getting Veronica Mars just the
I hope
the
so,
series.
Too, because right now the series is kind of hard to find.
When am I going to get my Lost reunion? I'm ready for it.
You might get that at some point.
Give it 5 more years.
When am I getting Terrier season 2? The answer is never.
You're never getting that.
Man, Deadwood's going to get its movie.
I know. All right. And then the last bit of sort of TV bad news, potentially. Wild Last Man showrunners have exited the FX series. It's creative differences.
I thought this was a bad news thing, but the way you were talking about it when you were...
So the network gets going forward with the current cast. It sounds like basically these creators, who are solid creators, they've worked on some good stuff, that basically they've split ways. But John Landgraf is the president of FX. John Landgraf is maybe the smartest guy in TV. He's the reason we got The Shield. He's the reason we got Sons of Anarchy. He's the reason we got Terriers.
Yeah.
This guy canceled my favorite show ever, and I still love him. he is the smartest executive in television. And he says, if you want to get things right, you have to stop, you have to slow down, sometimes you have to shut down. It's not an easy adaptation, it's taken us a long time to get it right. And that's the words I want to hear. It's like, he's not saying these guys are bad at their job. He's just saying...
It's wrong vision. Wrong
vision for us. And honestly, I trust John Landgraf.
Yeah.
More than I check Ida, Mashaka Kral, and Michael Green, who have been involved in some good stuff, but also in some bad stuff.
Yeah.
So, if John Landgraf says this wasn't the right fit, I'm
inclined to
believe
him. If this is
the
guy that's given us Terriers and that, and I assume Justified?
Justified, Always Sunny in Philadelphia. The list of hits that have come from FX is huge.
I'll wait for the better version of a Wild Last Man show.
I'm curious who the new showrunners will be. We'll see. Also, keeping in mind that there's been a lot of showrunner turnover in genre TV. Discovery had a bunch of turnover, and it's worked out just fine.
Yep.
American Gods had a bunch of turnover, and while I'm not a huge fan, it's definitely something that people like. So I think showrunner turnover is just kind of the way it is.
Yep.
Agreed.
Yeah. All right. That's it for news this week. We'll be back in just a second to talk about comics for the week.
One familiar cry. Rocast.
We are talking comics for the week of Wednesday, April 17th, and it's my birthday.
Yes, it is.
I mean, not as we record this, because that's not how time works. But as you listen to it, it's my birthday. Unless you're listening to it late at night, which is not my birthday yet.
What if they listen to it a year from now?
Then it's still my birthday.
What if they listen to it a year and a day from now?
Then it is the day after my birthday. and Nick had his birthday last week. It's true. It's big April birthday month.
Happy post-birthday thing.
But that's not important. What's important is that there are comics.
Yes.
And a good week of comics.
I was going to say, compared to last week, I think we all had, potential, six picks.
We have a ton of stuff. And, in fact, we're starting with that occasional thing we do where all three of us want to talk about one book. In this case, two books.
Yep, and although she is not in on the podcast, I believe, and I know she was as into one of these books that it made her immediately read the linked book to it.
Yep.
And assuming she liked that one, she would probably be adding her voice to this.
So the books we're talking about are Buffy the Vampire Slayer number 4, which we knew was coming out, and Angel number 0, which Boom described as a Beyonce album drop.
Yes.
Basically they did the thing that they did with Die, Die, Die. They just sent it out to us.
Yeah, it came out of nowhere.
On the invoice, it was under, I believe, Tooth Fairy number 0.
Yeah, that was the code name.
We had, We generally order 2 months in advance. So and you know, there's usually a zillion articles and previews and things like that. Buffy had that, all that.
Yep.
This one came out of nowhere.
They just match it to our numbers for Buffy. Yeah.
Right. But cleverly ties into the Buffyverse thing. It is part of that reboot universe.
Right.
And as a way to like kind of drum up some interest, well, I think it's going to work out because it also is a good book, obviously.
Yeah. Well, Angel Number Zero picks up literally at the last page of Buffy Number Four and then shows that from his point of view.
From Angel's
and then goes to tell Angel's story.
Yeah.
So let's start with Buffy.
Okay.
Buffy Number Four is does it feel to you guys like some time has passed?
Yes.
Like
the opening is almost a montage.
Yeah.
And there is a suggestion, like Giles in it is like, I think something bad is coming.
Yeah.
And he's like, we need to, you know, it's actually kind of an interesting, if ominous thing. He's like, Buffy, why don't you take a little time off and enjoy yourself? I think something bad is coming. Yeah. You might as well recharge your batteries before it hits.
A little dim and gloomish.
That bad thing is Drusilla.
Yes.
They think is going to unleash a really nasty plan.
Can I tell you how much I enjoyed the idea of Xander and Willow sparring and like getting better? Like they never did that in the show.
Yeah, yeah.
I really love the idea of them sort of training.
Or Cordelia dreaming about Spike.
Yeah, I also like Giles kicking a pad as he's got some. He's got some old man skills.
Yep. Just every once in a while. It's because this isn't Giles, Randy. This is Daddy Giles.
Daddy Giles.
They just acknowledge what had always been there.
Yeah. There's also some really fun stuff in here with like the guy Robin Wood, who Buffy's got kind of a crush on.
Yep.
And who we think is like the remastered version of the principal from season later.
Okay,
season
I was trying to figure out if I was supposed to know him. By the way, who is Joyce dating?
So that's a new character.
Okay.
I really like what they did with him here, where he's basically like he sees that Buffy's been coming in like
with bruises,
and he's like, look, I'm a doctor, I can help you out, just
and he actually lives there.
He's a living boyfriend.
Which I think is an awesome kind of.
Now, it would be nice, by the way, if he was kind of a normal guy who's the decent person he seems to be.
I hope he's not a robot.
But he could be he could have some role in something. Like, he could be like, oh, I actually know about supernatural stuff because I used to be a wizard or whatever.
If they made him a robot.
I guess they don't do wizards on Buffy.
I hope that's not the exact line.
If they made him a robot, it would be a nice callback to the
I didn't know about
thing,
this kind of stuff. I used to be a wizard. Like we were watching Harry Potter this morning at the store, and I guess it's in my head.
Also,
I love the fact that cell phone technology really does play a huge part into this series.
Yeah. Well, right now, Buffy's angsting because she lost her phone, and her mom won't buy her a new one because she keeps busting phones, which I think probably, I'm going to guess every parent right now has dealt with.
But if you're slaying vampires, the potential of losing your phone is pretty big.
There was a bit in here I loved where Buffy outright says what she's really doing to her mom, and her mom thinks it's slang. She's like, I've been too busy, Mom. I've been slaying all week. And she's like, you kids and you're slaying. Yes. And you're training.
So I have an important question. Uh-huh. And I don't want to get too spoilerish. How dumb is Xander?
Because
I feel like, I mean, I understand he has a crush, but
the way he gets kind of played on.
All
right. Throw yourself back to, like, teen crushes.
Sure.
Yeah. And if something, something is dangled in front of you. Yeah.
You're gonna go for it.
Also, Xander has always been a doofus.
That's true.
He really has.
He's like a likable doofus, but he's a doofus.
I don't want to spoil anything, but there's maybe something big with Xander here if they're going the way it looks like they might be going.
I think they're going where they think, where it looks like they're going.
But I also like that they're dealing with Willow's...
You're a wizard, Xander.
with Willow's girlfriend and how they're sort of handling that relationship.
I like that, too.
It just feels like everybody's getting their kind of moments.
Yeah.
And,
They broadly still feel like their former selves.
Yeah.
But sometimes that characterization mixes stuff from a little bit later on, for sure, with Willow.
Oh, yeah. You know what? The thing is that even when, like, Whedon was writing Buffy, it didn't feel like Buffy. It felt like, I mean, he clearly embraced the comic bookiness of it to a fault, I think.
Right.
So, like, it didn't feel like Buffy. It felt like Buffy as a comic.
I'm so glad it doesn't feel like that.
It is so rare for a licensed property to translate this well, but this feels like Buffy. Like,
yeah.
I'm really enjoying this.
And then you get Dan Mora's artwork.
And Dan Mora's artwork is the best... Probably the best investment they made in the series.
Yeah.
I mean, I take that back. The writing is really strong.
It is.
And Jordi Belair deserves all that credit for basically translating Whedon into a modern idiom.
Yeah.
So, but right behind that is Denmark.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It's clearly a team effort.
Yeah.
Yes, something big happens at the end of it, which leads then right into Angel.
Angel number zero.
Angel number zero. Just a quick throw out one negative thing. I'm not as big into the art as I was with Buffy.
It's still solid, though.
It
reminds me of kind of like Tommy Lee Edwards somewhere in that kind of ballpark.
Right, and instead of the slightly more clean line artwork that reminded me of like some of the people like, say that Bendis, you know, his name? Or Dan Moore reminded me a little bit of like the people Bendis worked with on the Miles Morales books.
It's grittier.
Here's what I'll say about
arguably... Sense. That fits, yeah.
Also, I'll say this. It is better than almost anything Dark Horse had on their
adaptations. By far.
Like, it's no Georges Gianti. He's definitely still good. I think his likenesses are much better.
I think they are. I don't know that I like...
I just think the storytelling, everything is a little clearer. Yeah. Georges Gianti was solid, but every once in a while I felt like his panels were very clunky. And, like, what exactly was going on in that?
It's true. This is very clear. Incidentally, I read this... having not ever watched Angel. I haven't even watched the first season.
So none of this stuff is from Angel.
I was going to ask you.
These characters are all new.
I was going to ask if these were adaptations or new.
No, like, this is actually a completely different take on Angel.
Just because of cultural osmosis, like, I know about Fred. I know about Cordelia and her visions. I do know a little bit.
Yeah.
There's some interesting stuff here because...
But, like, Cordelia's not in this.
No.
Nope.
But what's interesting, there's two new characters. Angel is clearly sort of... He's trying to fight... he's already doing the fighting stuff. Like, when he came to Buffy in the show,
that was
he was sort of lost.
Yeah, he was basically just wandering in the alleyways and somebody gave him a purpose.
Yeah, but here it's like, he actually tells the girl, he's like, don't make me happy, you wouldn't like me when I'm happy. And like, he didn't know about that.
Yeah.
So I don't think they're going to do the Buffy Angel romance. Or at least not the same way.
Not in the same way.
Yeah, it's gonna have to occur in a different way.
He may be more of a mentor.
Yeah.
I mean, he's already the sort of tortured soul.
I do want to call, the artist's name is Gleb Melnikov, which is a fantastic name.
Say it again?
Gleb Melnikov.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
And also introducing a new character named Fifi, which I was very enamored with, just sort of the concept of her.
Yeah.
And sort of the mysticism and stuff. I don't know. I thought this was I was very much into this. I mean...
Yeah, the threat, you can see, is also a pretty high level... like, this kind of shows you that the world he's in is, like, maybe more immediately deadly than Buffy's world.
Yeah.
Just a slightly higher level of threat.
Also, we get to see just how vicious Angel can be. I mean, if he cuts loose and things like that.
Yep.
And also, I love the backups where we get to see Dan Mora's character designs, but also Gleb Melnikov's character designs as well.
Yeah.
You know, Angel is arguably angsty in this. He's fully aware of like the horrible things he's done, and feels like he needs to suffer, and clearly deprives himself of kind of like joy in life.
Yeah.
It's the kind of thing that kind of could have gone wrong, but in the hands of a strong writer can still have some resonance, and I think that's going on.
Yeah.
Who's Brian Edward Hill?
He's done a bunch of other stuff, and I feel like in general I'm not a fan.
But maybe this is one of those things where he kind of like stepped up to the plate.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. When I heard that he was the writer, I was a little not as excited because the stuff he's been writing, he's a screenwriter.
Okay.
He worked on The Legend of Muay Thai and The Mechanic.
Mm.
But he's been working... He wrote some of the Detective Comics stuff that Nick hated.
Is that?
Yeah.
Oh.
He wrote Postal and Cyberforce and some of that stuff.
You know, a lot of these people may have some love for the properties themselves, and that's sort of kind of fueling the fire for it. Because I definitely had issues with his Detective Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a more thought about product in a lot of ways.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah, we all, as a team, recommend Buffy the Vampire Slayer number 4 and Angel number 0.
Yep. Buffy, because it is a lead-in, read Buffy, then read Angel.
Yes. Yeah, exactly right, yes. Nick, you're the only one of us number ones this week. Why don't you kick it off?
Well, I'm going to do a massive cheater pick.
Yep, go ahead.
Because, you know what, it was my birthday, and screw it.
This is your present to yourself.
Exactly. I am picking all of the War of the Realms this week, and that includes
That's 80 different titles.
Yes, no, but that includes 3 different books. There's the War of the Realms main series, which I did not know is going to be bi-weekly. That's crazy.
So does that mean that the series is going to be relatively short?
I think it's relatively short.
Like 3 or 4 months or something?
Yeah, it's 6 issues, so 3 months.
Oh, wow.
Which I think is pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
So, War of the Realms number 2, War of the Realms The Punisher miniseries.
Yep.
And then War of the Realms War Scrolls.
Scrolls. Like a wound up sheet of paper that a wizard might have.
Yes.
We're looking not for the theme away. Of the issue of the podcast.
We're not going to get away from the wizards, are we? Luckily, there are wizards in here because we have Doctor Strange.
Uh-huh.
True.
However,
wizards I knew it.
The main War of the Realms, the second issue, is fantastic. When I was reading it, I couldn't help but think of what Randy said, that this is Jason Aaron really hitting on sort of the Infinity War stuff. And this is him basically utilizing the Marvel Universe in kind of fun ways. We get to see Punisher and Wolverine meet, which I think is great.
Yeah, that was fun.
Get to see...
Like, they've met before, you just...
But, I mean, like, in kind of this poppy sort of way, but also... In a war setting, where
right? They're like in a Asgardian war torn. Well,
it's a good little bit of
Midgardian, but
yeah. We have Doctor Strange trying to get people out of the city through the Sanctum Sanctorum.
Mm-hmm.
We have his like supporting cast of like the Ghost Dog
through the Sanctum Sanctorum. Is he like quick into my bathroom?
Well, apparently the Sanctum Sanctorum can hold millions of people.
Interesting.
It's bigger on the inside.
It's bigger on the inside, like a TARDIS. But yeah, and they're using like his ghost.
That's how he picks up chicks. A quick escape into my Sanctum Sanctorum.
We also have all the Avengers, like Cap fighting frost giants, which I thought was very cool, and he does it in a very unique way, in a very Cap way.
Just shoots him with a tank.
Ghost Rider fighting the Enchantress.
So they're not skimping on the shared universe quality.
The shared universe quality is fantastic. And it's also just this sort of larger-than-life stuff. I mean, it's just all of, like, Asgard's villains fighting all of Midgar's heroes. And then a bunch of Asgardian heroes, like, show up in this issue. And kind of, this is, like, hardcore war and... There are stakes.
Mm-hmm.
Not everything is jokes, even though there is a lot of levity in this.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that are not going the hero's way, which I think is needed in a story like this.
Yeah, for sure.
And the artwork by Russell Dodderman, I mean, he's just killed it on everything, and he is very detail-oriented, but not in
Never
sort
Dodderman.
Of... God damn. But he's never kind of like... so engrossed in the details that everything feels static. It has this kind of life to it.
He's still, it's not quite the same, but he has some of that Frank Quitely energy and layout.
So, I love the second issue quite a bit. If you've enjoyed Thor at all, War of the Realms is going to be right up your alley.
And even if you haven't, because I don't read Thor, but I really liked War of the Realms too.
Yeah. And then there's War of the Realms The Punisher, which if you've ever wanted to see Punisher fight some trolls and dark elves... and a frost giant, and was like...
Is he like, it's still crime. Pillaging is still a crime.
Pillaging is a crime.
I mean, you're not wrong, technically. There are some other factors that feed into this, but this is Punisher sort of kind of taking up an ideal and, you know, kind of sticking with, man, these heroes may be looking out for everyone, but no one's looking out for, like, the normal people.
Yeah.
So, yes, Frank is taking his
I thought
his
it was,
war.
Like, an ideal that was more like, frost giants need to die.
I mean, he probably agrees with
does,
that, too.
He does use hand grenades on a frost giant.
It is very satisfying. I think Jerry Duggan has a pretty fun handle on Frank. Maybe not, like, the... Frank, most people want
to
see.
You have to talk about the first part of the story, the very opening page, where he comes to a piano teacher, and the teacher is like, "Oh my god, oh my god! I bought weed when I was in Colorado. I didn't think you'd." And he's looking for piano wire, and he comes to get piano wire. And the piano teacher's like,
"It's like a music store."
Yeah,
and it's the amazing. Guy has,
and
yeah.
the teacher's like, "What do you need? What kind of piano do you have?" And the Punisher gives a look. He's like, "Oh,"
because
it's a great little opening scene.
Yeah, because the Punisher plans for all types of warfare. He's like setting up not Home Alone traps, but Home Alone traps. if you're a Punisher fan, I think you're gonna enjoy this. But it also feeds into just a fun story.
Yeah,
it really
it was good.
Is.
It was good.
Art on there, which I'm not familiar with this artist, Marcelo Ferreira.
Yeah, I liked it a lot.
Very, very good. And then War of the Realms War Scrolls number 1 is sort of the kind of jam issue that has a bunch of short stories in it. There's a fairly notable one by Jason Aaron and Andrea Sorrentino about Daredevil and how he sort of fits into this, which he is going to have a major part in War of the Realms.
Pays off for something set up in War of the Realms too.
So there's that. There's a Warriors 3 story line that I thought was humorous but also fun, and still had a point to it. And then there's a Wolverine versus Dark Elves storyline that, you know, Wolverine, I love that now that Wolverine, his costume in War of the Realms is just his cowboy hat and white shirt. I don't need him in a costume. This is perfectly, like, one of his things.
Go ahead.
No, it's what he shows up in War Scrolls, but that's how he is depicted in all of the War of the Realms stuff.
Not feeling the costume right at the moment, except in over in X-Men, I guess he is.
He's in his old brown and yellow costume.
Now, I think that they're kind of waiting for the main book to take their lead, but he's not using his heat paws, is he?
He is not using his heat paws.
Which we... are they just going to drop that?
That'd be amazing if they just dropped it.
People were just like, I'm not really feeling it. And they're like, okay.
That's dumb. His claws cooled off.
Oh, I forgot. There was one final story in here, which is actually by Chip Zdarsky and... I forget who was the artist on
it's
Howard
Joe
the Duck. Joe Quinones. But they do sort of a follow-up to what Howard the Duck is doing during the War of the Realms. which you have, man. If you read any of Howard the Duck, you'll kind of guess where that goes.
That Colorado weed?
Yes. But honestly, the War Scrolls was interesting. It had a lot more tie-in to the main series than I was expecting it to.
So that is sort of the side anthology, is kind of, if you were to characterize it?
It's their home front.
Yeah,
but it feels a little more important than home front, which felt kind of a little too off to
light,
the side.
Yeah.
For like Civil War and stuff.
Dave?
Let's see. My pick this week is going to be a callback to a book that whose first issue I picked, but I've been a little up and down on it. It is Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy relaunch from Donny Cates. As you may remember, in the first issue, Thanos was dead and sort of at his what would you call it?
Wake.
Or reading of the will, kind of. Yeah, it's like a wake.
Reading of the will.
A hologram says, is like, oh yeah, I planned for this, and he's like, does he actually outright say, I've, you know, found a way to project myself
he
beyond death?
Oh yeah, he basically says, I've basically going
transcended
to...
Transcended it.
Transcend it, and I'll be reborn in another host,
right.
Essentially.
And so, basically, everybody has been Kermit the Frog panicking since then, and...
Are you saying they're Muppet arm flailing?
Yes. The obvious, seemingly obvious choice for him to inhabit is his daughter, which is also gross in a way if you think about it.
Yeah,
it's
very
Gamora,
nice.
Who I perpetually want to call Gamora. So if I ever
she's
do that, you
just
slap me in the face.
I will.
Even though she's green, she's not a giant turtle.
But turtle-ish. No. There's essentially sort of two sides going on here. You have the hunter down side, which is actually a lot of people, a lot of their cosmic heroes, led by Star Fox, who we think may in fact be the person inhabited because he's weirdly bloodthirsty, or that could just be Donny Cates' take on the guy who's the brother of a sociopath and who has been, even in recent Starlin stuff, characterized as a kind of different kind of sociopath.
Yeah.
So maybe that is the direction they're going with it. I don't love it, but it is... He has Gladiator from the Imperial Guard backing him, and that is, like, the heaviest muscle you can get.
If you have Gladiator, you're kind of just like...
Gladiator is literally based on Superman, yeah. Meanwhile, they've been trying to themselves... Peter Quill and his crew, which includes, like, speaking in full sentences now, punk rock kind of Groot, to, like, teenage rebellious Groot, but a little bit, maybe actually showing some signs of maturity at this point, have been trying to themselves find Gamora... but it's a kind of a heart-rending thing. I forget. I don't know all the history that's happened between her and Quill in this, but it's clear he's kind of like, he's drinking, he is burnt out, the other Guardians are kind of pushing him along, but he is barely wanting to do this.
You have to remember that Gamora went full-on, like, evil for the last Infinity Wars.
Why did she go evil?
I think it was
like,
sort
was
of
it the
like
gem
predestined,
doing it?
Like Thanos was kind of manipulating beyond the grave.
Okay.
And she got a hold of all the gems and went insane.
Right, I was wondering if it's one of those things like, was it her fault? Or is it the tides of her villainous father's manipulation?
I think it was a little bit of both.
Okay.
Because she definitely kind of went into it.
Marvel heroes aren't all about being completely pure characters.
Sure.
So, they do find her in this one, and the new team, which includes like Moondragon and Beta Ray Bill.
Is that Beta Ray Bill getting shot in the head or on his like?
Yes, yes. Gamora tried to snipe him in there and tagged his helmet.
I don't think that's going to go over very well.
Beta Ray Bill, who's a very serious guy, it's actually kind of funny because a little ways into this one, after he's undergone a fair amount of chaos, he says something like, "I wake every morning and wonder, what is my role in this team?" but he's also been kind of like, almost like the leader at times, because Quill is not stepping up to the plate yet. It seems like at the end of this issue, things start to solidify.
It's cool. I love Beta Ray Bill.
What happens in this issue is the two sides confront. Essentially, they're able to they've manipulated Nova, Star Fox and Gladiator and stuff, have manipulated him into, like, thinking he's going to warn the others, and they track him or whatever, so he accidentally leads them to where she's hiding out, which is on Rocket's old planet, I think. Nice.
This is Richard, right? Richard Rider?
Yeah. What is it called? Half-World?
Yeah. It's Rocket's old world.
Yep. And so there is, like, big confrontations in this one. Some cool action. I did like seeing Peter Quill kind of manning up a little bit there, and I don't know, I just like almost everything that was going on in this one, even though there's occasionally times when I'm like, I don't know if I quite buy where how all the players got onto the chessboard the way they are, but I am liking almost every scene that I'm hitting. Also, something sort of big happens at the end. I don't know if it's... I don't think it's what it looks like. But something big does happen in there, and... So, I kind of got back on board the series with this issue.
I need to go back and catch up.
Yeah, I'd recommend it. Also, for the record, the Cosmic Ghost Rider, while he is with their team, is very much in the background this issue. So if you're not a fan, he's pretty downplayed in this one. I'm sure he's just in the background blowing up some stuff. Anyway, so Guardians of the Galaxy, number 4.
My week is Chip Zdarsky week. Both of my picks are Chip Zdarsky. And he also had a War Scrolls story, so it's a Chip Zdarsky.
I just with one of my Wednesday regular customers the other day was having a discussion that he like Zdarsky is like his new guy.
Yeah,
because he's like in Daredevil, he's like in Invaders, and he's like in these Spidey book.
Well, Zdarsky has gone a little. He's writing a little darker. He was the humor guy, and it turns
out he's the comedian with the dark soul.
It turns out he's got some serious bones in him because Daredevil is. Basically, Daredevil, when he came back, he'd been beaten up pretty badly, and it seems like he may have screwed up and actually killed a thug. And he's been, you know, thinking he got framed by the Kingpin. And in this issue, he's been rescued from the cops, who think he murdered this guy, and he's starting to realize maybe he did. And it's really the bad time for Punisher to have him in his clutches.
That is a bad time.
It's all about Punisher basically talking to Daredevil about how he's like, you're a coward, and if you kill these guys, then they wouldn't go out and kill any more innocent people. And, you know, he's like, I let myself be a monster and it makes other people better. And it's... We've seen this kind of thing with Daredevil and Punisher before. Garth Ennis famously did it, and I think Frank Miller did it. But this is a different type of this story that I've seen. I actually really liked Zdarsky's writing of the Punisher and Daredevil. It's also got some pretty spectacular action. There's a notion here of, like, if Daredevil ever did cross the line, he's like, do you know how much damage I could do with guns? Because of his abilities.
Oh, yeah. He'd be basically like a Deadshot.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's fascinating. I really like what he's doing. He's definitely, you know, Daredevil's at his best when he's been pushed in the corner, whether it's Brubaker putting him in jail or Bendis having his identity outed. And this whole thing where he faced death and Kingpin is the mayor and he's just not fully sure of himself is another way of pushing Daredevil in the corner. In a similar way to what's been done before, but a very different way. So
right.
It's really good. And Marco Ciccetto's art is fantastic.
And that's why Iron Fist is not going to defeat him. Even if he starts to get the upper hand, Daredevil in a corner is the deadliest Daredevil of them all.
We forgot our poll today.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have to put that up in a minute.
It's not too late.
And then my backup pick is Spider-Man Life Story number 2, the 70s, which I know we all were anxiously anticipating seeing what this book looked like, because we all really love number 1.
Yep, but incidentally, I did not realize until I read the issue, or my mind didn't connect it, that even though I had seen a preview of the cover, that it is a Green Goblin pumpkin bomb that is also a disco ball,
yeah, it's
if
a
I'm
disco
not
ball.
Mistaken. Yeah. I just hadn't noticed that until just now.
So, as with the first one, which was took the Spidey in the 60s and modified it a little bit more of what was really going on in the world, which is the Vietnam War, this is sort of we're at the tail end of the Vietnam War, and we're getting into sort of the disco area in Studio 54, and It is about Spidey, but Peter Parker's life has become now that he's in his, like, 30s.
Yes.
And
things have progressed for him.
Yeah, well, he's married to Gwen. Not a big spoiler. That's on the first page.
Yep.
Something has happened to one of his buddies. He is working in a lab with Reed Richards and someone else that's really interesting. Meanwhile, Harry is still being sort of controlled by his father from prison. And they get into the Clone Saga story. They get into what Mary Jane is up to if Peter is married to Gwen. There is their take on the Clone Saga.
Without saying too much, MJ and Studio 54, I feel like, is a very clear pairing that fits pretty well.
Their Clone Saga goes to very dark places.
Not even just the Clone Saga part, but like just the characters, like the. There's a part where like MJ and Pete kind of start get into it.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is a serious ass fight.
Yeah. Well, he has sort of a throwdown with Reed Richards too. Not like a physical fight. We're talking about like, you know, a fight. Like
this
they're
is
just
a series,
yelling at each other.
Yeah. This is a series that's meant to kind of push the characters show like, okay, when you're in a difficult times, you know, whether it's the Vietnam War or you know dealing with death or sort of what superheroes it's the right thing for them to do. You might get in some arguments with people.
Yeah.
And they could be pretty serious. These are... Zdarsky has turned up, like, the kind of... The seriousness, the realness of it. Like, oh, she said... MJ actually says something... I don't think this is too much of a spoiler to say. She's kind of talking about how kind of self-righteous Pete is.
Yeah.
And especially from a... Like, in a meta context, like, most of the time in the comics, it's kind of because he's right. He's got that little sort of superhero thing where he's... You know, his heroism kind of and truthfulness kind of always comes through. But in, like, real life, he'd be a little bit of a pain in the ass.
Yeah.
And they kind of call him out on that. I think... I almost got the feeling that Zdarsky himself might kind of feel that about himself.
Yeah.
Like I don't feel like he was just projecting and not writing Pete as he was, because I absolutely think it fits him.
Yeah.
But it was interesting to me to see something like that analyzed, which doesn't usually come up in these stories.
Yeah.
And there's some interesting things going on there, even as I occasionally felt it was almost a little too serious.
Yeah. I really liked it. I don't know that I loved it as much as I loved number one, but I'm very curious to see where they go from here.
Mm-hmm. The preview on the last page suggests something pretty interesting.
Yeah,
you saw what it was.
Yep. Dave, your backup pick?
All right. My backup pick is just as I return to Guardians with that one, is a return to Gideon Falls, Jeff Lemire's suspense horror series. I don't want to quite say psychological thriller. It plays out like that one, but it also plays out kind of like a... almost like a serial killer movie or something like that, where there are various different parties, two different groups really, have been trying to investigate these sort of Twin Peaksian mysteries and murders and disappearances in the town of Gideon Falls is sort of where it's taking them. And something very notable happens in this issue. Much of it takes place in the 1880s with Gideon Falls then, and some weird things happen. There is some, like, weird cult-like things and that's clearly supernatural. But then something happens into it when they are there's a group there that is trying to track down the killer. And they, like, walk into this room and, like, a crazy magical event sort of thing happens. Like, a reality-warping thing that changes everything. And the priest, who's been one of the main characters in it, who's been investigating things in the town of Gideon Falls in the present... he is in here in the 1880s. And I've actually got an issue or two behind, so I won't lie. I got a little behind on exactly where the plot is headed. And there's a few things in here I was like, wait, what's going on? But essentially, I feel like he is, you know, just as if the previous 12 issues have been very David Lynch, I feel like he is moving into Dark Tower territory. Because there is another world that is glimpsed in this that seems yet another variation on it. And near the end of the issue, the priest starts drawing out a map, and the map shows linked realities. And he's like trying to. He's like, I think I'm going to need to do this to navigate them.
You have my intention.
And it is not like... It has that feel of, I'm guessing, of what the Gunslinger books were like. Yeah. I actually haven't read them, but I know a bit about them. Where it's pretty serious business. It still follows like a very suspenseful plot. It's not going to be like, oh, let's go have a wild romp in like the medieval version of Gideon Falls, but it does seem like there are maybe different eras, different time periods represented, and one of them is kind of nuts. At the same time, there's this super scary grinning man that is definitely the antagonist of it, and some of reveals about how he's moving around between these worlds in it. And it kind of re-sparked my interest in it, so that I'm going to, now that there's, what, two trades out?
I believe there's two trades.
I think issues 1 through 10 are essentially 1 through 5, and then, or wait, is it 1 through 4 and then 5 through 8? They might be slightly smaller ones if this is issue 12 and it's not in the collections. But yeah, it kind of re-inspired me to want to go and take a look and see what exactly is going on, because it's the thing that happened in this one was super cool.
Yeah, I mean, from the get-go, I read the first issue, and mm-hmm. it felt very Stephen King. And it,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely, it's got that vibe. You know, there are the two stories. There's the psychiatrist and her patient, and then there's the priest and the weird small-town mysteries. But, of course, they're ultimately linked.
Yeah.
And one thing I like about Lemire, and this goes for many of his books, is that there's a sort of unpredictable nature to them.
Yeah.
And this one took a swerve that I wasn't expecting, but I do think keeps it within the realm of Stephen King style.
He's good at cliffhangers.
Yeah, he is.
That last page, you're like, the what?
Yeah, exactly.
I think they've done that on a couple of Black Hammer issues, yep. And I'm just like, okay, where are you going to go from here? Because you've obviously written yourself into a corner.
Yeah, something I hadn't thought of, but I might say, like, if I were to pick the writers who are best at cliffhangers at the moment, he would have to be among the high choices. Nick, secondary pick after the many cheater picks?
Yes, after my many cheater picks, I'm diving back into the Star Wars universe.
One more cheater pick.
Yes. I'm diving into Star Wars with their new book, TIE Fighter, written by Jody Hauser. Which focuses on an elite group of Imperial TIE Fighter squadron. Basically a squadron of TIE Fighter.
What do they call them? Like Shadow Wing or something?
Yeah, Shadow Wing.
Pretty cool.
And it's sort of right after the Death Star was destroyed. So they're trying to basically wipe out the rebellion. It is kind
of... This is original Death Star?
Yes.
Okay, not Jedi.
This is a little hard for me to kind of... Because we're learning sort of about these characters, and I'm like, but these are the evil people, right?
Right. It's like, oh, do I really want a series about a Nazi tank commanders?
And a commander named Grandmother, which felt like Granny Goodness a little bit.
Right.
But again...
But people, like, commanding officers sometimes get nicknames.
Oh, yeah. No.
So...
But, you know, I have to sort of...
They're going to be cool because they get the black jumpsuit. That's the main reason to become a TIE fighter pilot, so you get the cool black jumpsuit. It's the closest there is to Darth Vader without being Darth Vader.
It's true. I mean, the TIE fighter pilots do have an amazing aesthetic.
Yeah, I remember the first time I saw them. Is it in the... It's in the first movie, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yep. Their helmets are fantastic. They've got these hoses coming off of them.
You know what you need to do, Nick, you watch that anime-style short that showed TIE Fighter pilots wreaking havoc. You need to, that would be a good companion piece to this book.
I was
watch
gonna
this
say,
to get kind of pumped.
I was going
to
say, that sort of feels what this book is going for, because it is sort of...
I wonder if that inspired it.
I would not be shocked.
Because, yeah, that zeroed in on, like, three pilots, and even though you really... It was there was not a story per se, but they would show them under the helmet. So you'd see there's like, oh, that's the craggy older pilot. Oh, here's there's the young female pilot, and you know this is the hotshot guy or you know, whatever. They had sparks of personality based on their visual designs.
Yeah.
And here I guess it looks like they kind of get to run with more of the behind the scenes. But I bet it might have been inspired by that.
Yeah, but it's also focusing on the different characters, the different members of the squad, and sort of their ulterior motives and. You know, sort of their relationships with one another. Everyone is outright evil.
Well, when I was making the sign for this, I read their solicit, and I think it said something about how, you know, they're essentially like these fierce problem solvers for the Empire, but the series would, like, ask how far are they willing to go and, you know, and maybe question their allegiance.
Yeah.
So there may... It does seem like they may be...
And they're
considering that.
Because of sort of the backup story that's in here as well, there's definitely more going on and definitely some more ties to Star Wars universe. Sort of the bigger picture that is alluded to. So, I don't know. It's a very interesting first issue. I have not been reading many of the Star Wars books.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of got burnt out, like I said at the beginning of the podcast.
But now Star Wars as a franchise has snuck up on us again.
Again?
Yes.
This is very true. I would definitely recommend that one. Other things on my list this week include Mary Shelley Monster Hunter, which is actually taken pretty seriously.
That's the vibe I got, again, from making the sign for it.
But I was very enamored with it. I think it's written by Adam Glass, but it's sort of a real-life account of what made Mary Shelley write Frankenstein.
Right. And my understanding is that essentially it amounts to she and her small writer's circle of friends and lovers go and visit, like, Castle Frankenstein or something like that. And, I don't know, something happens.
Exactly.
The events of the books, their own events, something that inspires the events.
It's interesting. The art is gorgeous. It's very kind of Kevin O'Neill-ish.
It is nice. It is nice.
Thor number 12, which is all about Loki, even though he died in the first issue of War of the Realms.
Yeah, sure, he's dead.
Yeah, exactly. Batman 69, which is the final Nightmare issue, which I think I said last time, but this is really true.
I don't believe you. Also, I don't know what that means.
It's possible. And then Uncanny X-Men 16, which on the cover is... I have to remember that's an homage to another cover. Like, one of the ones that Jim Lee drew Mandarin.
The first Lady Mandarin, yeah. Or no, the second Lady Mandarin, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, sorry. Because I did skip that era, there was a character named Lady Mandarin.
Well, I mean, Psylocke was Lady Mandarin for like three issues.
Got it.
When she came back, she was Lady Mandarin.
Yes.
Just
because she was
that name.
Yeah. Well, she was being mind controlled, and she was working for Shinobi Shaw, wasn't she?
She was brainwashed by the Mandarin.
Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, this one deals with Magneto and Juggernaut, and there's a Captain America appearance, and I don't know. Rosenberg is just hitting all the sort of right buttons for me with X-Men, and this is probably my favorite X-Men book that
they've done. I swore off that one because I liked X-Men Gold and I didn't like what they did, but it seems like everybody who's really reading that really likes it.
Well, and it's fun to see the characters in their old costumes. And
What issue is it?
This is issue 16.
Issue 16.
And we don't know when it's wrapping. We're not sure.
How many trades have they put out?
Just one,
okay.
Yeah. Which is really just the first 10 issues.
But that makes it pretty easy to catch up if somebody wants to.
Yeah, sure, because we still have 5 and up, I think.
Yeah. The first 10 issues is all about sort of the Nate Gray stuff. I think it was issue 11 is when basically they brought Cyclops back, and then it's been an amazing book.
Cool.
Dave, what else is on your stack?
I nearly picked this, Naomi number 4. Issue number 3 was the one that kind of got me back into that series that had all the big reveals in it, and this follows up and has the explanations for it, and some cool stuff among that. It plays to Bendis' strengths. It's parents explaining something to their kid, and the kid occasionally makes guesses as to where the story is going. It's like, oh, and so that's when you came to Earth and you fell in love with Mom, and he's like... Okay, not quite. And there's still some mysteries to be had, including one big mystery. But I think even that, it looks like it's going to be resolved next issue. And there's a big cliffhanger in this that you have to say is a pretty good cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Did you got to the end of it, right?
I did.
That is what I think it is, right?
What you think it is.
Okay. So anyway, just kind of cool mysteries and flashbacks to her father. Can we say what it is now?
Yeah.
Yeah, her father, or I mean, we might have even at the time, is from Ran.
Yes.
And was on Earth hunting, like, a Thanagarian assassin. They play up the whole Ran-Thanagar war.
He, like, worked with Adam Strange on Ran, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah. What does he say? You'd like him?
Yeah, you'd like him. You might not know him, but you'd like him.
Yeah. And also really nice artwork from whoever that person is.
Jamal Campbell.
Yeah. Let's see. There's the first issue of a new Xena comic from Dynamite. I didn't get a chance to read this, but the vibe I got, just a quick flip through, is that it is set kind of during the heyday of the series and isn't like one of those, here's what happened after.
Yeah.
But I don't know that for sure. The art's a little bit kind of stylized, and so it could be set after that. But it's just not the vibe I got.
Does she at any point say Battle on Xena? She never said that. Actually.
They should have that. That should be, you know, there to be continued.
Or there Stanley Presents.
Yes. I'm looking real quick just to double check. Okay, they don't do that. It's a big missed opportunity. But they do begin with the opening narration where they're like, it is a time of ancient gods. They call on that.
Yep.
There's the third issue of the Star Trek Q conflict that has Trelane, the sort of foppish hunting dandy godlike alien, given charge over it. And naturally, he takes the scenario that they were going to be involved in and completely changes it to make it deadlier.
Yeah.
And then finally, there's the third issue of the Transformers series. I am continually weirded out by this series. It really seems like it is shooting at a sort of serious sci-fi vibe. And there's interesting things in every issue. Like, I'm keeping up with the story and all the everything that's going on in it. But it is almost frustratingly glacial in its pacing. And I just, I don't have a sense of where it's going with it all. Maybe when they hit issue 5, which I assume is the wrap-up time, 5 or 6 for the trade, I'll have a sense of it. But right now, I'm still kind of like, I could end up still being on board this series, or it could do, you know, like, if it doesn't end satisfyingly that first arc, I might be like, well, that was an interesting but failed experiment.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll see. Randy?
All right. So Spider-Man City at War number 2, this is the sort of adaptation of the video game, but they're adding stuff in. I have to admit, I really love this video game, but I didn't think an adaptation would be this interesting. But this is all focused on Miles Morales and his part in the game, and it shows us the Swarm, who we never saw in the game, but who apparently they talked about so much that it was in their notes. So this is what Swarm would have looked like if he had been in the game.
Swarm, the Nazi
made of bees. Yep.
Yeah.
And it does, like, it references the story of Miles and his dad, and the big moment where, like, Spider-Man stops a helicopter with his webs and Miles take a picture. But it's also got new stuff that's sort of connective tissue between all that. It's a really fun read, and I would say if you like the video game, it's worth reading this. It's not just a pure adaptation. It definitely is, like, filling in some gaps. Meet the Skrulls number 3, which continues to be a really fun look at sort of espionage from the Skrull point of view. It has really beautiful artwork by Nico Henriquin. Magnificent Miss Marvel, the volume number 2 by Salim Nemed and Minkyu Young. This book looks and feels a lot like Miss Marvel. It's not quite there, but I'm interested in what they're doing, and he's definitely going off in his own direction. So it's a solid pickup of the series. Miles Morales, Spider-Man number 5. Again, fantastic artwork. Marvel has great art across the board this week. Spidey gets involved in a gang war. Tombstone is, like, setting all the gangs against each other. And he's having trouble getting his web fluid built up because Genki can't find time in the lab to do it. Iron Man number 10 is the penultimate issue of Dan Slott's first run. Incursion number 3 is Valiant's story of the Eternal Warrior versus the Undead. It's actually a really good story. It's beautiful art by Doug Braithwaite. Assassination number 2. This was my pick last month. It's a lot of fun. There's some great action. This particular issue has them all doing, like, whole 3 or 4 panels of what their first kill was. It's kind of a goofy, fun book. And The Little Bird is another book that I really like the first issue of. It's super weird. It's, like, fantasy, sci-fi, evil Catholic Church opposed by Canadian resistance. It is such a strange book, but it's a beautiful book.
It feels like this could have been, like, a project from the Heavy Metal dudes.
Yeah, and I'm curious to see where it goes. And then I wanted to do a shout-out to the Doctor Strange by Donny Cates complete hardcover this week, which has the entire Donny Cates Dark Doctor Strange run in it, which is really good. That's it for us this week. No topics to speak of, so we'll wrap it up here. Until next time,
Yo, Joe!
Thanks for listening. If you like the show, do us a favor and spread the word to your friends. Or give us a quick 5-star rating and review on iTunes to help us grow our audience. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at www.roguesgallerytx.com. We'll be back next week.